This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
So we're joined by Dr. Siska Kemper, who's also here at the launch party with us, and she'll be involved in the Open Time Key Projects with Herschel. Can you tell us a little bit about Herschel? So the frequency observation range and what it's going to do for science.
So Herschel is in fact the largest telescope that has been, or at the moment that has been launched into space. It's got a mirror of 3.5 meters. And with that size of mirror, it's very suitable to study the infrared. And we're looking specifically at wavelengths longer than 50 microns. So recently there have been observatories looking at wavelengths shorter than 50 microns, but now we're going to longer than 50 microns, which is the domain where you can see thermal emission from relatively cold dust. So dust that is sort of a few hundred or less degrees Kelvin. So this is the dust that you find in star forming regions, sort of ambient presence in galaxies, and it can go down all the way to just, you know, tens of Kelvins. So it's a very large wavelength range covering from about 50 microns to about 800 microns. It's got three instruments on board. It's got Hi-Fi, Spire and PAX, and it's got spectroscopic and photometric capabilities.
So just for our listeners, a micron is a micrometer, right?
A micrometer, yes. That is 1/1000th of a millimeter, yeah.
So can you tell us about the key science projects which Herschel will be involved in?
Or is that a secret?
The Open Time Key program that I'm involved in is called Heritage, which aims to observe the large and small Magellanic clouds, which are satellite galaxies, their own Milky Way galaxy. They're quite small galaxies, but because they're so close by, they're actually really interesting goals, interesting targets for us to study, because we can actually look at individual components in these galaxies and try to work out what are the constituents of this of these galaxies. So what we've done so far is we've looked in sort of shorter wavelengths where you see a lot of the hot dust and you trace a lot of the sort of stellar components of these galaxies. And now with Herschel we're going to focus on the colder part of the spectrum, and we're going to see the colder dust present in these galaxies. So we're tracing more of the star forming regions, we're tracing sort of the structure of the interstellar medium in these galaxies.
Could you talk us through the imaging procedure or the actual receivers which you'll use in Herschel?
Okay, so Herschel has got three instruments on it. It's got PAX, the photodetector array camera and spectrometer. It's got Spire, the spectral and photometric imaging receiver, and it's got Hi-Fi, the Hetzadin instrument for the far infrared. And these three instruments all observe in three very different parts of the far infrared. So PAX is the one that observes in wavelengths that are closest to the optical, so closest to what we can observe with the naked eye, and it looks at wavelengths between 50 and about 200 microns. And in this wavelength range, we are sensitive predominantly to sort of dust of mid-range temperatures, so maybe about 100 Kelvin or so and lower. And this still traces things like star formation, and the imaging capabilities allow us to actually map the structure of star-forming regions, of the regions that contain a somewhat hotter dust. And we can see where concentrations of material occur in a variety of environments, really. And then with the spectroscopy, we can look at actual compositions of the dust. The spectroscopic component is relatively high resolution, but not all that high. So we can look at dust features predominantly with PAX. If we go to the longer wavelengths, we've got two instruments that are important. We've got Spire, which is very similar to PAX, apart from that it operates at longer wavelengths. So once again, we've got a photometric component, so we can survey the structures, but now we're looking at colder dust because we're looking at longer wavelengths. So we're looking at large-scale structures within galaxies, for instance, tracing the arms, tracing all sorts of structures. And we've got the spectroscopic component to that. And then the third instrument is called Hi-Fi, which is a very high resolution spectroscopic instrument operating at roughly the same wavelength as Spire. And this is very, very suitable to study all sorts of complex molecules in space, in all sorts of environments, because we have the sort of the precision to make out what molecules are present. Another advantage of looking at the far infrared, these wavelengths that we're looking at, is that it's very suitable to study galaxies at high redshift, because things that we normally observe in mid-infrared wavelengths now suddenly move to longer wavelengths, and we can suddenly study star formation activity at these wavelengths in the distant universe.
So
So could you explain to us why we have to do infrared observations from space?
Okay, well, infrared observations from space are extremely important because if you look at a galaxy as a whole, what you'll see is that of all the energy that a galaxy produces, up to 90% of this energy actually leaves the galaxy in the form of infrared radiation. So it is our ultimate tool to look very distant, to very great distances in the universe, and we can trace a lot of galaxies by looking in the infrared. Infrared radiation is formed because optical light and UV light are reprocessed by dust particles and absorbed and re-emitted by the dust and then re-emitted in the infrared. So you not only do you trace galaxies on themselves, you also trace the population of the dust in these galaxies. And if you look on a sort of a sub-galaxy scale, if you're interested in the various components within a galaxy, then infrared radiation will tell you exactly where concentrations of dust are and where, therefore, star formation is going on. So it traces distant galaxies and it traces star formation environments, and this is why looking in infrared is very important.
Can you detect infrared emission on the ground, or does it have to be from space?
Yeah, right. So this is actually one of the major obstacles we've encountered with infrared astronomy. So while we do have a couple of windows in the infrared, we have a lot of windows in the near infrared around sort of 2 micron and thereabouts. And then we've got a few windows in the mid infrared at 10 and at about 20 microns, for which you actually have to position your telescope on a big mountain, really, to make sure that you're above most of the atmosphere. If you're interested in any of the other wavelengths, and especially the longer wavelengths, where the majority of the infrared radiation comes from, the Earth's atmosphere is going to block most of that radiation. So in order to be able to access that wavelength range, you'll have to go into space. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us today.
Okay, no problem. You're welcome.